Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, I'm Jared Padalecki.
And this is Jensen Ackles.
And you're listening to Winchester Radio.
Well, hi, everybody. Welcome back to Winchester Radio. this will be the penultimate podcast for the antepenultimate episode and the penultimate episode tonight. We're going to talk about last week, episode 18, and tonight, and last night's was number 19. Last week was despair, and boy was it. number 19 was inherit the earth. I was just talking to Becky a little bit before the podcast started, and just feeling like, as far as last week's episode, despair, there's not. The most important part of it is at the end, and I want to go, I think, if it's okay with Vinny, we're going to go right to that part of this episode. That's the biggest thing, the scene where Cass sacrifices himself.
Listen, I can't talk about it without thinking of the memes, so I'm going to talk out.
What? What's that?
I can't talk about despair without thinking of the memes. And like I can't take it seriously. I'm sorry. If I try to take it seriously, I'm just gonna get angry about the context that episode stands for. And either I laugh or I rage, and it's just neither one is good for anybody. Because you know what? No, go ahead. You all go ahead. And then
you know,
I
no, no, no.
Rage.
We talked about
no,
that.
No, no, no.
Hang on. Two seconds, because we talk about it, and I said, you know, should we, we're going to talk about, I said, there's so much about that scene, there's so many things wrong with
that.
Oh,
no, it's
so
not even that
levels.
Scene I want to talk about. I don't even
front
give,
the
I don't
camera,
care about that scene, that is not even what I want to talk
camera,
about.
Let's just talk about all of it, and I don't care, and like the Becky asked, what are they going to do, fire us? No. So,
well, there's that too.
You
know what?
So,
there's a thing I always say that it's not exactly the nicest thing to say, and it's very cussy, but whatever, I cuss all the time. I'm gonna unfuck that to the side. I want to talk about the fact that I have pegged Robert Behrens as the racist, misogynist, ableist asshole that he is. Since day one, and anyone who wants to argue differently can kiss my entire ass, because I want you to come to me and tell me how this man was allowed to kill. I don't even like Missouri, but he was able to kill a legacy black character, fine, just to promote his failed spinoff, where he killed another non-white character, then retroactively was like, oh, by the way, she was going to be queer. Okay, but you killed her in your backdoor spinoff. Okay.
Mm.
Now we're going to fast forward to two seasons later where you immediately gave Charlie a girlfriend that you introduced in episode 3 of this season, a black woman, gave her 3 lines, killed her. Killed Charlie, killed another black woman. You made Cass queer, immediately killed him, and I'm supposed to praise you for you doing what? I have never been more embarrassed by this show than I was by that episode. I am embarrassed. I cannot imagine ever telling anybody who's never watched Supernatural that I love this show and to watch it. I am mortified by what this show did in that episode. It's disgusting. This is a show that for years I told people, you know what? Yeah, it's 2 white dude leads. I'm sorry. It does what it says on the tin. And then, okay, they added Cass. And I was like, another white dude. Yeah, all right, but it's 2008 and fine. Whatever. But remember, Misha Collins was not the first regular for this show signed on. This show signed on 2 women the season prior. Phantom threw their temper tantrums over it. Threw their temper tantrums over Katie. Threw their temper tantrums over Lauren. Fine. Okay. Misha's supposed to be on for 3 episodes. Oh, but he's a white male, so fandom loves it. Cool, we'll give him a contract. But you're all still going to complain about how this show is nothing but white males. You get what you ask for, though. Bitch complain, bitch complain. Cool, sign on another regular, Mark Sheppard. I love Mark Sheppard. I love Crowley, but at the end of the day, Mark Sheppard is a white male. Okay, fine. Complain, 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 bitch, bitch, bitch. And we begin to diversify the cast. And you just kill everyone off because you can't not keep your core white males. Oh, but you added some white females. Great. Okay. Hi, Rowena. That's great. Lovely. Oh, but you added Billy. And Death is supposed to be neutral. And you added a black woman. That's great. And you made her evil. Because of course you did. Because of course you did. And I really enjoy Alex as Jack. I'm not even going to hide that. I don't care about Jack as a character, but I thoroughly enjoy Alex as Jack. But again, at the end of the day, Alex is just another white male. And I'm going to skip ahead to this episode, and we'll backtrack. But there was a point where I was watching last night's episode, and I went, how am I watching 5 white men to stand around in one scene? And, like, you almost had a little bit of a passing on the Bechdel test because you had a woman there. And she wasn't a love interest. She was deaf. And that, okay, fine, I'll give it to you. White woman that you replaced the black woman with, but fine. And then you killed her immediately, and we went back to 5 white men. And I cannot wrap my head around what this show has done after the years of me going, Supernatural does what it says on the tin. I am so angry that Robert Behrens continues to have a career in Hollywood, because what he did was, not just in that episode, but over the course of his tenure in Supernatural, was disgusting. And no one will ever be able to tell me differently. And if you try, I don't want to hear you. And I'm done.
See, I told you, Susan.
Yeah.
Vinny would give us some good information. I knew she would.
Yep.
That's exactly what we were wanting to talk about, Vinny. You hit it right on the nail. That's exactly it.
Yeah. I didn't think I was angry anymore, but apparently I am.
Yes. And it's again, Becky and I talked about this a little bit before we got started and came on. I said, would you like to talk about all the behind-the-scenes stuff that went on? You know, like Misha knowing that scene for a year ahead.
Oh, yeah, we can discuss that, too.
Giving the writer a note,
and then Jensen not finding out till months later, and Misha being worried about what he'd say. And you know what? If you're worried about what someone's going to say, then don't do it, because
I'll take it a step further. Let's do the math. Let's roll the tape and do the math.
Okay.
So you knew for over a year, Misha and Behrens, you all knew what you were doing. Fine. But you didn't tell Jensen until 3 months before you guys decided to shoot 18, which calculations means that was filmed at the beginning of March. So let's say the beginning of the year. Let's give you January. Okay. Do you know when 1509 was filmed? 1509 was filmed in October. So that scene that they gave Jensen to do in Purgatory, telling him in the script that it's because Purgatory ramps up your emotions, Behrens and Misha knew what they were doing, and Jensen didn't. That's
your lead.
one of your top leads. Two leads.
And I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give Jensen
15 seasons.
Yeah, I'm going to give Jensen a title that isn't technically his, but I'm going to give it to him on this one. Because at the end of the day, Supernatural is a unique entity. And for all intents and purposes, they did this to their boss. Mm. Jensen Ackles, at the end of the day, was y'all's boss. Do you know what my boss would do to me? The fact that they did that, and the fact that when Supernatural went into shutdown, and everybody went into lockdown, and Jensen decided to still support and assist Misha with Gishwis, and all those Zoom calls, and everything that benefit Misha's companies financially, because I don't want to hear a goddamn thing about how it's charity. Gishwis is not a charity. I don't want to hear it. And when all your charity, air quote, stands, Gish, whatever, when the money washes directly through the nonprofit that is owned by the same owner, it's legal money laundering, and I don't want to hear you.
You won't hear me.
And the fact that Jensen decided to be whether nice, naive, or professional enough to still show up for those things, Misha Collins owes him the world. The absolute world, because without Jensen, you are nothing. I have been so diplomatic, as diplomatic as I possibly can on this podcast about Misha for years. Not on Twitter. I don't even pretend. I'm not even going to pretend I'm diplomatic on Twitter. Call me out. I do not care. But I try to be diplomatic on this podcast. But that's...
Mm.
Dude, you're gross. You're gross. You knew what you were doing and you played your friend. Not your friend, because I would never do that to a friend. You played your coworker.
Yeah.
And
your boss. Your co-boss.
Yeah.
Because
I
at the end, Jared and Jensen are
and I'm not even gonna get I'm not even gonna
the
get
end
that
into,
show.
They were the
Yeah,
ones.
I'm not even gonna get
they
into what a slap in the face it is to Jared as well. And I understand that at the end of the day, Jared and Jensen are grown ass men, and it is not my place to defend two middle aged, very successful, very privileged men. It's not my place. But it is my place to judge another middle-aged, successful white man, and I will. Also, on another note, we have been suffering from this, in this pandemic since March. Dear Misha Collins, put your hand away. There is not one month that you haven't had your hand out for something to this fandom. Put it away. Put your hand in your own pocket. And I don't mean your charity's pocket. I do not mean the money that fandom has given you. Put it in your own. Open your own purse. I'm tired of it. I'm tired.
Let me tell you.
God, I'm so sorry. I'm real angry, apparently. I am so sorry, everyone. I'm real angry, apparently.
It's okay. Well, to continue that, Misha is putting his hand in his own pocket. Misha and his wife apparently have quite the contemporary art collection. And I only know one artist that they collect. So if there's any others that they do that are even similar to the one that they collect, they are spending minimum five figures on a piece. And apparently they own more than one. And that's a luxury. Art is a luxury. That is my day job, full disclosure. I've been in this day job for over 30 years, so I know whereof I speak, and I know how much things cost in the art world, and it's a luxury, and it's a tough business, especially in a time like this, and you don't you have plenty of money if you're buying artwork, you're comfortable. Depending on, of course, what piece you're buying, there's artwork out there for a couple hundred dollars, but. Not the contemporary art collection that Misha has, I promise you. So, don't worry. He's not poor anymore. He had his days as that.
Oh, nothing drives me crazier than his fans telling me that he doesn't have money. Because I remember him doing the ice bucket challenge in his Italian marble bathtub. And that was years ago.
Mm.
So he's been collecting art for years too. So he's fine. Don't worry about it. I mean, granted, he had his tough days. They were homeless. I got it, but that's not true anymore. So.
And again, that's fine. Anyway. I don't begrudge people spending their money how they want to spend it. But again, you are constantly asking your fan base, who, even the ones who are comfortable financially, have far less than you have. And I have no proof that you have put your money towards anything. And the only money that I can see that you have put under your name, air quote, is the money that your fan base has provided to your companies, because Random Acts may be a nonprofit, allegedly. It's still a company. Any nonprofit is still a company. Any charity is still a company. So when you have your companies, which, again, Gishwitz, not a charity, it's a for-profit, where a portion of their proceeds go to Random Acts. Stamps is a company. It's a retail company where a portion of almost every campaign they do, the money goes
of the profit
to Random Acts.
And that's a very fluid.
Well, I'm saying, but not every campaign they do does it get washed through Random Acts. So I'll give them that.
Right.
But every campaign Misha does. So, again, I'm not saying he's doing anything illegal, because he's not. Everything, all of that is legal. You can do that. That doesn't mean it's not gross. So, whatever. At the end of the day, I am extremely embarrassed about what this show and this fandom has grown to be, because this year in general, and this is something that I've had build in me for a while, but this year in general, again, being in this pandemic since March, well, before that technically, but everybody officially going into some form of shelter in place, lockdown, quarantine, however you've been able to do it, and watching essential workers, or even if you are not a technical essential worker, but you have to go out and work because you have to live, and watching very, very privileged people who were, just go, hey, could you maybe give me money to put into my account to garner interest for my tax break? And I'm going to give the one exception to Sam Smith's campaign, because I recognize that with Sam Smith, she was going through I can't imagine what she went through. And watching everyone rally around her for that I give an exception to that. But everything else that was done, and I'm going to put Jared on the chopping block for that one too. Every other campaign that was done, you all could have waited or just not done it. But you all knew that the show's coming to an end, and this is it. So everyone ran through stands, through the company Misha owns, back to back to back to back to back to back to back campaigns, and then interspersed Gishwitz Hunt in there. And I just can't abide it. I can't. And watching them all just, excuse my language, just circle jerk promote each other. It's just, why? Because you guys don't have conventions? And, I hate to give Jared and Jensen exceptions on this, but they diversified. They have separate businesses and separate incomes. They diversified their portfolios. And I'm so sorry that the rest of you didn't, but you didn't. And it makes watching the show harder. It makes even going back and watching episodes harder, because it's harder to separate art from artist. You all made it harder. The writers on Twitter, you guys made it harder. Playing with fandom, mocking fandom, embracing fandom when it suited you, and pushing fandom away when it didn't. I shouldn't have to watch a show and sit there and go, oh, but this is written by such and such. Ugh. Because I don't do that with other shows.
My other show.
I think I really am
year.
Done this time. I think I'm done this time.
All right. If you're not, it's okay. We're here. We have plenty of air time left.
It breaks my heart to be this angry right now and this embarrassed right now because I have spent the better part of not even just a decade, but going on 14 years just enamored with Jared and Jensen and this show. And I still adore them, but to dislike everybody around them is so hard because I know they like these people.
So, not done.
No, I mean, that's my closing statement. The defense rests.
Okay.
Or am I the prosecution? Yeah, the prosecution rests.
All right. Like I said, we got plenty of time. So something else comes to you, I want to hear
it. Well, I like 19, so I wanted to get that out.
Well, sadly, I have something to say about despair. Not too much, but something. about the actual like scene in the episode and not so much the behind the scenes. And I don't disagree with anything you talked about. And it is hard. It is really hard because the veil between show and the people who do the show is so thin to almost be non-existent sometimes with Supernatural. It is very hard to separate. I was going to say my other like fave show that ended this year, the two stars, my favorite pair, wisely are not on social media, not one bit. And it makes it so much easier to enjoy that pairing. And even though that show was over, to continue, go back and enjoy it, just knowing that, you know, I don't have to be concerned with anything like that. Anyway, they have their own difficulties, but it wasn't the two stars, so that's a good thing. For despair, the scene where Cass confesses to Dean, "I love you," and then takes off into the empty. It wasn't even good acting. At least that's my opinion about that. It was not well done, and I'm like, okay, I have not been a fan of the actor or the character for a very, very long time. Maybe I'm watching it prejudiced. So my dear coworker, I said, will you please watch this scene for me? Because she has zero knowledge and zero interest in Supernatural. If I ever say anything, she listens because she's my friend, and she's interested because I am. She's just a lovely, lovely person. And also her daughter was a child actress and a model and still like coaches people on tape and all that. So she's got a little bit of inside knowledge. I said, will you please watch it? Just tell me what you think. am I going crazy? You know? And she did. She watched the scene where Cass confesses. And she was like, she liked it. She said, this is a great scene. And what's happening? I hear the noise in the background. What is that? And I said, you'll find out. Don't worry. But it was the empty coming through, but she wouldn't know that. And I'm like, and while she watched, I listened. And actually, it was easier to bear when I only heard it and didn't have to look. You know, the actual sort of confession wasn't as terrible. But my coworker said something interesting when it was over. She goes, it reminds me of a soap opera scene, you know, when they make that kind of confession. And I like soap operas. I watched General Hospital for so many years and Days of Our Lives for a while and All My Children. I like them just fine. But Supernatural is not a soap opera. And that type of sentiment and characterization and dialogue did not belong. Did not belong. Did you say melodrama? I didn't hear.
Oh, I just said it's a drama.
Said it's not
a melodrama. Yeah.
Because
there is a distinction between soap and drama.
Yeah. And I like soaps. There's nothing wrong with soaps, but Supernatural is not a soap opera. So I thought that was an interesting comment she made, but you know, she didn't know about anything else, so she ended up liking it. I would love her daughter to watch it sometime because she's the one who coaches people for like scenes and to go to auditions and stuff like that. But maybe someday. Anyway. And
I know Becky wants to talk, but I take it back. I wasn't done, so Becky can go first, though.
Ah, jeez. Okay, I can go? Okay. I was watching, my mom was here. She never watches Supernatural. My mom was visiting because my son was getting married a couple days later. So we're watching it, and I'm sitting here, and I know that scene's coming, and how Castiel's talking. I'm like, oh, my God, this is ridiculous. And Russ rushes in because he knows how my feelings on Castiel too. So he comes in to watch, and I'm like, seriously, I'm watching this, and I'm like, you know, I'm ready to scream. But then after it's over and everything, it's like, I don't see it as the big love scene that apparently a lot of other people did, because. And Susan and I kind of talked about this a little bit beforehand. I don't think it means Castiel's gay. I think Angel's, okay, he used to be in a woman's body, right? I mean, we saw that in a flashback. Mm-hmm. Castiel, the angel himself, is genderless. And, you know, I think, they're the gender of whatever their vessel is. So it doesn't make him gay because he happens to be in Jimmy's body. It's just he's, you know what I'm trying to say.
So
there's this big gay love and compassion.
I'm going to help you out with that in two ways. So, correct. So what I said earlier, and I actually clarified this on Twitter multiple times in the past couple of days, but I'm going to be a little more detailed again. They didn't just, like, you outed your non-binary character as officially pansexual because also Cass isn't human. So you took your non-binary character officially, well, I mean, let's arguably already he was pansexual because of Meg and she's a demon, whatever. So you took your non-binary pansexual character and had him declare his love for Dean. Fine. So you didn't just bury your gay, you took it to a whole other level, man. That's some impressive bigotry.
Yes.
The only other way you could top that was to make him trans. And arguably, I mean, I'm not even going to say that. I mean, I'm going to put it out there. That's an arguable right there. But I'm going to rewind to something where I'm going to be a little more technical on something first. There was part of me that didn't realize that I was going to try to be nicer about this, but I mean, I've already said all I've already said, so why am I going to try to be nice? I'm going to rewind a bit, and then we're going to go forward. Dear Richard Spate Jr., this is not your first rodeo as a director, and I know that you're going to go on to direct one of my other favorite shows. You're going to continue to direct Lucifer. You've done one episode so far. From what I understand, you're going to continue to direct in that show. And I assume that you want to continue to, you know, have an income. So learn how to hide a pregnancy.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I should not be so distracted by your actress's pregnant belly. Not even pregnant belly, just the bad blocking in general. That I have to rewind what was said to understand what's going on in the opening scene because I can see more of her body than ever before. Did you not even, like, what did you, were you falling asleep behind the camera? I don't understand what you were doing. There is not one point in that. And here's the thing. In Drag Me Away From You, you could tell Lisa Barry was pregnant there in the same way that in season 4 of Angel, you can tell that Cordelia is pregnant, because as a woman, you can tell the difference between a woman has gained weight or a woman is pregnant. It's a matter of water retention. It's a matter of swollen nose. There's details that are different between being gaining weight and being pregnant. It's visually different. When you're watching 1516 and Billy is sitting behind a diner counter because we're hiding that she's pregnant, if I really focus, I can tell that Lisa Barry's pregnant because her nose is swollen. I was a little more distracted by the awful wig you guys put on her, but let's not even nitpick there. This show's real bad at wigs. The CW is just real bad at wigs, and I don't understand it because wigs are not that hard.
And sometimes hair. Never mind.
Yeah.
Hair.
Yeah.
It's just hair.
But we're gonna put that to the side. So okay, Dick Spate, I need you to, because you're going to be on, you're going to Lucifer, and one, you know, thankfully one actress has already had a baby. She might have another one. There are several women on that cast. More pregnancies might occur. Learn to hide it, because it's. I'm not saying it's easy, but directors have been doing it since the dawn of film.
Mm.
Learn how to do it. That was, again, embarrassing. You have pregnant
soap operas.
What even
really
is that?
At it. They're really good.
That was not even the blocking in this episode was atrocious, in general.
Mm. There was.
The fight scenes were poorly choreographed. No, I'm actually, scratch that. Lou Bolo will always do a good job. They were not poorly choreographed. They were poorly shot. Again, that's on Dick Spate. But.
Well, Cass tosses Dean to our right, and then Dean falls to.
Oh, God, the editing. I'm not even going to get into the I am going to get into the editing. The editing for that scene, that final scene. Okay, wait, hold on. Why didn't we Thanos snap everybody? We are not that far out from Endgame. Cheap. That was cheap. It was dumb. It was cheap. VFX, I don't know what happened to you guys. You guys were great, and I don't know what happened. So we Thanos snapped people. Fine. Again, that editing. Push Dean to one side, he falls to the other. But let's go to that scene. And I'm going to say this as someone who is really not happy with Misha Collins right now, but y'all did Misha dirty. Y'all did Misha dirty. Dirty with that lighting. Y'all did him dirty with those camera angles. I felt bad for him.
I couldn't look.
The fact that that episode was not 30 minutes old before all the memes popped up is a testament to how poorly that scene was executed on a technical level. I'm not talking emotions. If you got emotions out of that, bully for you. I'm not going to tell you how to feel. I might judge you, but I'm not going to tell you how to feel. But on a technical level, y'all did Misha dirty. Angle, you know, that's a man he's in shape. That's a runner. And I've met him. We've all met him in real life. He is not an overweight man. You made him look like he had been drinking for 3 weeks straight and had, like, whiskey bloat. The lighting was so bad. And then the editing where I, you know, one of my favorite things that somebody said was, it looks like they filmed the two actors separately and didn't tell each other what the other's one's dialogue was. Because it just, there was no flow. I don't understand. I'm going to be honest. If I was somebody who, I don't even want to say ship that ship because you didn't do anything for the ship. There is not a single person I know that didn't already know that Cass was obsessed with Dean in some capacity. Who was surprised by that? Not I. So there was literally absolutely no point to that. Okay, fine.
And
all you
was
really
not
did was
reciprocated.
No, it was never going to be. All you did was retroactively rewrite all of Castiel's motivations for the past 10 years. because since you can't tell me when Cass realized he had these feelings, then it's up to me to decide that. But I do know that the narrative has told me that he was lost from the minute he laid his hand on Dean's shoulder. Okay. So then I'm going to go back and question him burning Pamela's eyes out. I'm going to question him. I'm going to question every time he threatened Sam's life.
Mm.
Was that really for the greater good, or was that pure jealousy? I'm going to question him erasing Lisa and Ben from Dean from Lisa and Ben's memories. Why was he so ready to do that?
Bringing back Sam.
Because I'm
going to
take it a step further.
Breaking Sam's wall.
Breaking Sam's wall. All of that. And somebody pulled up a comparison where there's Lisa talking about it's almost the exact same line of I want what I can't have. And right there you're telling me that it has nothing to do with gender. It has nothing to do with sexuality. It has to do with Dean's feelings towards somebody. And you're not going to ever tell me that it's because Dean can't love, because Lord help me for the people who tell me it's because Dean doesn't know how to give love. Dean doesn't know how to take love. Dean Winchester is one of the most loving characters in television history. That character gives and accepts love so freely, whether familial, platonic, or romantic. This is a man that we learned in season one with Cassie, within a short time frame of knowing her, was like, here's my whole life, please accept me. And she was like, I can't. And he was like, well, that hurt. And he still helped her out when she needed it.
Yeah, and the
so
dialogue.
Don't tell me that he can't.
That Cass kept describing Dean, first season Dean, Daddy's blunt instrument. And I'm like, who is writing this? Someone who's never seen the show? Because Dean.
Yeah, this
whole
arc of being so angry. Yeah, this whole season arc of Dean is so angry. It really is. I used to say this, and obviously you guys had to deal with me saying this for years, which is really going to be funny because I know we all like the next episode, so bow down to me. But I've always said you can pull out every duo episode, and it's a coherent linear story. But I will tell you that I guarantee you if you pull out every Robert Barron's episode, he's telling a story. The funny thing is I don't think he's telling the story he thinks he is. Because he thinks he told a Destiel story. No, sir, you told a really bizarre love triangle. Oh, bizarre love triangle. That's funny. I didn't mean to do that. A bizarre love triangle story, and you made Cass Ducky. Cass is forever Ducky. And I don't even mean that in a ship way. I mean that all you did is enforce that all Dean needs in his life is his family, his real family, whether it's Sam, John, Mary, some combination of those, because it's not about romance. Completion of feeling good about yourself. Dean is the epitome of, I don't need someone to make out with. I don't need a place to stick it. I just need to feel comfortable and loved and love in return. And sorry, Robert Barron, but that's the actual story you told. You failed. You failed in what you tried to do. You tried to do something and you just didn't do it. But you made Lisa Collins look real bad in the process, so that's great. But I did like 19, and it was written by the duo, so vindicated.
Yes, 19 was a beautiful episode. Loved it.
Yeah. Yes, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot.
For the record, I want you both to tell me who wrote 19? Who was that? Who?
I was just
Nora
about to say.
Hey,
I was just about to say
bad about them. I've never said
that's
anything
true.
Bad about them.
That's true. Becky's much better. Becky's. But Susan, tell me, who wrote that episode?
Cheryl.
Roll tape. Wait, let me think. But it's funny because I was watching it and I'm thinking, this is just such a great episode. It's so good. And I saw this, but I said, you know, they're not my favorite writers over the years. They just have not been. And I know you've always liked them, and we've always discussed this back and forth. And I remember thinking, man, I'm going to have to tell Vinny what you write after all, because this pair, my God, in the end, they came through. It's Eugenie Ross Lemming and Brad Buckner, who usually are my favorites. But I gotta say that they pulled it out in this episode, because normally they have, like, for me, too much stuff going on and whatever. But this was like, it was actually, even though there was a lot going on and there was a lot of characters, it balanced well. So I'm like, wow.
I think
I'm going to have to come
COVID
out and
good
say
for
on
them.
The podcast, it's them. What's that?
COVID was good for them. It forced them to cut down on how much they could stuff into an episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that there were parts of this episode that you could clearly tell the effects of filming through a pandemic were there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that those are going to be things that, you know, in 3, 5, 10 years, people are going to watch and be like, oh, they shot this during COVID. No.
Right.
As we go through it right now, you can see that there are things where, you know, everyone's very far mm-hmm. apart. You know, in theory, they probably would have hugged Jack, but it worked for the aloofness of Jack of being the new God, for them to be distant. It worked, but you could tell
that
there were some things that were just a little...
Mm-hmm.
A little weird.
Yeah. And another thing about this episode is that, you know, the visual effects this season have, for me, have been, like, not very good a lot of the times. I mean, we talked about at the beginning, you know, the makeup. We could see the makeup on the monsters, and everything was too bright, and the effects were just not good. But this episode, I didn't have an issue, you know. There was any effects it had, I thought were well done. Even Jack, like, just going into the light at the end, becoming the light at the end, even that was nicely done.
And the scene where they're in the church and Michael comes to them, that felt like, and we've done dark school. Even this season, I think it was season 13, where we were also in a church, but this just atmospherically felt like a classic episode in that moment,
mm-hmm.
which goes to show that it's not just about darker lighting; it's about creating that feeling.
It made me feel like a season 3 episode. I don't know why, but
mm-hmm.
I was thinking season 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was awesome. Everything about that scene. Kind of scary
too.
And dread.
The
music
score
was
for this
wonderful
episode was
this
gorgeous.
Episode.
We had the musical soundtrack cues, but just the score itself, gorgeous. And it wasn't anything new, but it was just beautifully done.
And
then...
Like when all
and
the people
then,
disappeared and it was so quiet and just the little.
Oh, that
little
was that.
Music.
Yeah, again, it just gave such a great feeling.
Yes.
And
yes.
then it was also
wonderful.
It was also great to get rock music back. We got not one,
yes.
but we got two songs in this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great. I loved, you know, remember back in, you know, first season, you know. And rock music
mm-hmm.
plays at the end, you know, every episode. And
mm-hmm. and the
it
scene
brought,
with
brought me
the boys.
Back to the good times.
And the scene where at
now
the
I
very
will
end,
say,
the boys take off in the car and it's sort of washed out sunset and they just blast off through the, and the music, it was felt early seasons for sure. It was just gorgeous.
I would be interested to know. And I don't know if anybody's ever going to be able to truly get into the minutia of this, but this is the first episode that was filmed, you know, when they came back after shutdown and quarantines.
Right.
But it jumps off from 18, which was not locked into that, but already had the same storyline. So clearly, you know, everybody being gone and things like that, that was already planned. So it'd be interesting to see what, if anything, truly had to change from this episode aside from things like blocking.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can't argue that, like, Jody and I went to see who was credited, but there was no crediting for the second voicemail that they got. It sounded a bit
to me
like,
I was wondering who that was supposed to be.
Sounded to me like Max, but there's no credit for anybody. I waited through the end credits, and it's just
Max. Was he one of the witch twins?
Yes, Max Baines.
Okay, that's the one I was thinking of too. That's the guy I was thinking of.
Okay, because the timbre of the voice sounded a lot like Kendrick's.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So for anybody listening, that would be Kendrick Sanderson. But there was no credit for no credit at all for who it is. But Kim Rhodes was credited for her. So I don't know if they just picked somebody like on set to do a voicemail, and I want it to be Max. Maybe, I don't know. I like Max. I like the Baines twins a lot. So maybe it could be wishful thinking.
Mm.
But regardless, I mean, you can't even argue that they did that because of COVID restrictions, because everyone disappeared in 18. So those people were gone already. So I'd be really interested to see if anything for 19, aside from like just like maybe fight logistics, had to change, because I feel like very little storyline wise. Mm-hmm. Would have had to change.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe they were supposed to have some of those people that we saw disappear come back, like maybe Charlie or Donna.
Possibly.
Or even Eileen.
I assume, and I could be wrong, when Jack restored the people at the end, and we didn't see any evidence of Charlie or Eileen and all that he didn't restore the AU people because they went back to their AU when Chuck got rid of them. So,
Clarissa,
I don't know.
I was talking about that earlier because we're trying to figure it out, because you can argue the AU people, but Donna and Jody were not AU.
We're not, yeah, and we haven't seen anything about them. And Sam and Dean at the end just sitting on the table saying, you know, now it's their story and they're finally
free.
And they
did say all the people we've lost, which is arguable, like they've lost people over the entire span of the show. So
yeah.
I'm not sure how they're going to play that for 20, because 20 feels very, like, based on what everybody is saying and based on how this episode ended, it almost feels like 20 is going to be an epilogue.
Yeah,
and I'm
this
very
could have been
trepidatious
finale,
about it,
and I would have been just fine. Talking
about the AU people, the only way for them, you know, that means Jack would have had to have recreated their worlds too when he repopulated Earth. You know, he would have.
I assumed that. I feel like they kind of laid the ground. Here's the funny thing. Okay, so I don't think in the end what I'm about to critique or question, I guess, I'm not really critiquing it, I'm more questioning it. I don't think it's going to truly matter, and it's so sad that especially with like the last few seasons of the show, but especially this season, I don't even care. But a question. So we've got the very clear beat in, I think it was Give Me Shelter, which I think was 1515, of the demon that Cass summons, which, good job, because he clearly dragged that girl to hell. I'm not saying she was a murderer, but still, good job, Cass. Didn't need to summon a demon for that. Anyway, but the point of that was to say, like, Rowena has restored balance to hell. And to say, like, we don't do deals, we don't do anything, like, you either deserve to be here or you don't. We don't force anything. Fine. Okay. I'm not entirely sure what the empty is doing. Is she just still screaming into the, her own void?
Maybe.
I don't know. And then Jack is like, well.
She's torturing Cass. Maybe she's torturing Cass. He is there. And she's pretty angry. Well, she might be busy with death, too, because she was pretty angry at death, too.
I mean, but they both deserve it.
I wonder, too, talking about Amara. Okay, she may have supposed to be back in this episode, because, good Lord, that woman got the worst deal ever.
No, and that's the funny thing. I don't think she was supposed to come back. Here's the thing. I'm going to be real honest. Judging by the fact that we have a whole episode of just epilogue, and judging by the way certain things wrapped up, I genuinely feel like they had no story for this season. That their entire story was just the epilogue and how to get to the epilogue that they're going to tell. Or, how to get to this episode and the epilogue. And everything else, like, they literally gave us 18 episodes of filler. Because I'm going to tell you right now, this has been the absolute worst season of this show. And that's saying a lot.
Yes.
Especially me, that I'm a very harsh critic of this show. But this, I could not tell you a majority of what happened.
Well, you were just talking about a girl murderer and Gimme Shelter, and I'm sitting here, what? I don't know what you're talking about. So there you
because,
go.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you, it's so funny. I have spent this season trying to figure out this episode, and it was all for naught. Because I just kept thinking, they can't kill God. You can't kill God on network TV. It simply isn't done. So they're going to have to bind him in some way. So how do we get to that point? And then I was like, okay, but Amara, like, you have the halves of a fame and blah, 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 and brother symmetry and sibling symmetry and yada, 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 yada. And in the end, like, listen, we didn't talk about this episode, but in 1517,
Susan and I talked about it.
Okay, yeah. That was some weird vibes. Those are weird vibes between Amara and Chuck. Y'all had weird vibes.
Mm.
I don't have a sibling. I don't have siblings. But I can't imagine talking about my siblings' wick. We're just not going to ever do that. But also, like, you absorbed your sister, you weirdo. And you absorbed your sister because all she wanted was to be absorbed by you. Y'all are weird.
Like when Susan and I were podcasting that episode, I was like, why on earth would she do that? Because she had a fine life on her own, you know, hanging out at spas and everything. Why would she do that? And then I came up with the theory because, you know, she feels that she has this, you know, closeness with Dean, that she was going to be like a sleeper agent. You know, she made Chuck think that she was on his side, but she was going to break out and do something to protect Sam and Dean. But no, that didn't happen. She was just going to be in the background of whoever's God at the time. And it's like, why on earth would she have accepted that deal? That's just, it's stupid.
Like, I think it's funny how this season is all about, like, everybody trying to go, but Dean, hey, Dean, Dean, look at me, Dean, Dean, could you pay for Dean, Dean, Dean? And Dean's going, guys, shh, Sam's talking.
Pretty much.
And I mean, to be fair, that's, you're watching Supernatural. But, like, everything revolved around Dean, and Dean was just going, so anyway, Sam, I would really like for Sam and I to be okay, because Sam. Which valid. Yeah. As a Sam girl, I'm like, yes, Steve, you and I are on the same page, buddy. I get you. But the minute he absorbed her, I literally went, oh, so this is how we get rid of a woman. Cool. Again, I have defended this show for so long, and it was intent on proving me wrong. After so long of me going, I'm giving you the benefit of the doubt, Supernatural, I really am. And in the end, it went, Vinny, you are a fool. We are the whitest show you have ever met. We are the malest show you have ever met. And we are also the actual straightest show you've ever met. And I'm like, wow, wow, you really are. In the year 2020, in this economy, wow. But anyway, yeah, the minute he absorbed it, I was like, oh, so that's how we're going to take care of that. We, you know, how do you take care of two halves? You make a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But now I'm like, okay, so we took Chuck's powers, and he's just a man. He's just a normal man who's going to grow old. And I guess the Just for Men that they put in Rob's beard is going to wash out now. So that's cool. But does Amara live in his head? Did she just disappear?
She's in Jack's head now. Yeah, Jack said
she's
so.
In Jack now.
But, okay,
yeah,
I missed that.
Yeah, he said,
him.
She's with me. He said, she's within
yeah.
me. And we're in harmony.
Okay.
He said, we're in harmony.
I didn't realize that that was
yeah.
a she. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that's just weird. Well,
exactly.
I guess good for Amara, because being in Jack is better than being in Chuck. See, it just sounds dirty no matter what you do.
Well,
it's just dirty. Either she's
there
in her brother or she's in a toddler. It's weird. Y'all are weird.
I yeah. also, what happened to the Fiat Chesters? Where are the fancy Chesters? Are they
still
in Brazil? Are they back in their
are they
world?
In Brazil?
What's going on?
Ooh, then
they
may be back in their world. Yeah.
We didn't get clarification if Jack brought back all the if Jack created the AU worlds again and everybody went back to their AU world, fine. But if he didn't, then there's just two 70s in Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That was his season. There, I let a lot slide, Supernatural. It's been 15 years of me letting a lot slide. But that's dumb. As much as I like the idea of two sets of 17 running around, it's pretty. It's pretty in my head. It's dumb. Y'all needed to explain that, and you didn't. You should have. There never should have been a. We're sending him to Brazil. Never.
On a different thing. I have to say, they kind of telegraphed that Jack was going to become God with him wearing a light color shirt, a white jacket, and white shoes.
Totally.
And Swan Song at the end, when they told us that Chuck was God and he disappeared, he was wearing an all white shirt. And so here we got Jack in basically the same clothes, you know, all white. It's like, yep, he's going to be God. Because when did we ever see him wear a white jacket? He's always
tan gray.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, I gotta give more kudos to Alex, because he did such a lovely job in this episode.
I love
you
Alex.
Know,
yes.
He was just did a wonderful job as going from still young Jack, and I love him in his little jammies, you know, he comes out in his jammies, you know, Sam sleeps in a t-shirt and sweats, you know, and who knows about Dean.
Well, and I also
but,
like how
but
exasperated
Jack
he kind of was with Dean when
jammies.
He was like, yeah, when Dean was kind of like, I thought you didn't have powers, he's like, I don't know.
I sense a presence, and the presence was a dog, and you think it's important. There's people, and nope, it's a dog.
Hey,
you know,
dogs are important.
Granted,
dogs are very important,
and he was adorable.
We better see that dog
Dean
again.
Was so happy, Dean was so happy to see that dog, and they Chuck missed something, and then Chuck made him disappear, and that was really horrible. But at least we know that Miracle is fine. And probably headed back to his owner, because we saw him at the end of the episode trotting across the street. So I assume he's going back to his family.
I also like that they showed Jack with it harking back to his love of nougat. They showed him eating a candy bar in a real quick in the bunker, and I love that they went all the way. And oh my gosh, how I absolutely was so surprised to see Lucifer back. We knew that Adam/Michael was going to be in the episode because Jay Gable, made those awesome YouTube videos while he was in quarantine. but yes. I don't remember.
This is the episode of Brivalecki.
Yes, yes. And I
so
don't remember hearing anything about Mark Pellegrino being in quarantine. And I know a lot of people are sick of Lucifer. He's hung around too long and all that. But he's so much fun. And these little small pieces like we got him in this, mm-hmm. it was fun. I liked seeing him again.
I agree. I enjoyed, as much as I complained about the five white men standing there and we just killed a girl and a woman, yes, I complained. But on a, like, entertainment level, that was a fun scene. It was fun.
And there was that picture going around.
It cracked me up when Dean's running up to the door because he thinks Cass is there, and he opens the door and there's Lucifer. What's up? That just cracked me up.
The look on Dean's face is like, wow. And his eyes got really big and he slams the door. And I'm like, all I could think, though, is like, Dean, you're dumb. You know Cass is in the empty, you know? I don't know, but
thoroughly enjoy the very flippant way Mark Pellegrino delivers Lucifer's lines. And Mark Pellegrino, mm-hmm. like Mark Sheppard, is somebody that's, you know, in everything. So you get mm-hmm. to see how they act as different characters. And you can see, like, how different Mark Pellegrino is from other roles that he's in. And mm-hmm. so I enjoy him as Lucifer. He is, no shade to Jared Padalecki, because I love Jared Padalecki as Lucifer, but actually Mark Pellegrino is my favorite Lucifer. I'm very sorry.
I love Jared and Sam reacting to Lucifer.
Yes.
And
I will always enjoy and appreciate the little ticks that Jared adds whenever he mm-hmm. is playing against Mark. That he coils in, he's very distant, he's very it's
mm-hmm.
very smart acting.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody who did theater,
he's a little jumpy.
I had a really good director tell me, acting you do is when you aren't the one saying lines.
Yes, that's so true.
Which is
and
really
Jake
funny
Abel,
in relation to Misha Collins now, but anyway.
Jake Abel was fantastic as Michael.
I love Jake.
Oh, he's so great.
Yeah.
The way he held his body, you know, his tone of voice and everything, it was just completely different than Adam. And it was very regal, so very much like you would think the Archangel Michael would be. And
mm-hmm.
it was great. It was awesome.
Yeah, the two most underrated actors in the 15 years of this show are Jake Abel and Matt Cohen.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Mhm.
They
mm-hmm.
they
yeah,
do not
I'll
get enough credit
that.
For how good they are at mm-hmm. at their craft.
Yes. And can we talk about Smart Boys? Smart Boys coming up with that plan to beat God at the end.
Finally, Smart Chesters. Finally.
Yeah, just so much fun. And noticing Jack from the diner windows, noticing him taking the life source out of the plants, and then everything else. You know, there was no spell in the book, but Sam came up with a spell that sounded so real and so perfect that it fooled all of them. And and just knowing that Michael would betray, it was just so smart, so smart. The only thing I question about that is, how did you know that God wouldn't just snap his fingers and you'd be gone? I mean, you have to take that gamble.
On my second rewatch, but I guess that was the point of Sam saying one last shot. Or might as well, was to taunt.
Yeah.
And I guess for them it's the idea of we understand God's ego.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because
he was pretty
point,
angry.
At that point, I mean, you know, they had nothing to lose. You know, they were the last people on Earth, so
yeah,
you know, they were ready to either
well, I get having
yeah,
to take
throw
the
in
gamble,
or
but that was
But, I mean, it was a big gamble, but at the end of the day, like, what do you got to lose? I have a favorite part, but before I have a favorite part, I have one little part that I liked. And I will say, somebody who Chuck is so bothersome to me because I can't stand, I don't like skeevy villains. I don't like whiny villains. I like a villain that makes me feel like I could defeat you. I don't want a villain that makes me feel like I just want to take a shower. I want a villain I'm scared of. So, but once they get rid of his power, there's this really nice tick that Rob did where he's poking his finger in the sand that I just really enjoyed. Yeah. Just like, but when he is, and it makes no sense, and I'm gonna be upfront, but I love this, but it makes no sense. I love when he's beating them up and right before the Jack reveal, that they're holding each other up and laughing all bloody and grinning. It's so psychotic. It's so demented,
great
I love it. But it also makes no sense because y'all got a broken arms, broken legs. How are you doing this? And I get it. You're the Winchesters.
Well, they are.
And I respect it.
They're the Winchesters. that's a moment I love. It's a brother
there's
thing,
a nice
you know, Sam
tick.
Going to pick up Dean and hanging on to each other. And then they just laugh and they're bloody and Sam goes, "You lose."
I loved it.
And it's another
there's a nice
taunt,
little
you know,
tick that Jared has.
It's a dramatic thing. It's just, "You lose." Anyway.
Once Jack heals them, if you watch Jared, he does flex his arm because his arm is healed. That awareness of what your character has gone through, because again, that's a stunt actor that got their arm, air quote, broken. That wasn't your stunt. You didn't go through that. It's in the script. That means you paid attention to the script. A+. It's such a small movement, but it's such a small little thing that really makes it pull things together. But and I think that was probably of all the potential ways they could have dealt with God without killing him. I like that. I like the idea of suffering because you are no longer important. Your ego is no longer anything worth anything. I liked it. I think that was a fitting end. I think it's a very bizarre, the thing about making God the avatar for the writers and also like taking him from being the avatar for just Eric Kripke and expanding it to this metaphor for writers in general and really, really hammering that where it's like, welcome to the final season. You're canceled. Like, it was very heavy-handed.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, isn't it weird that, like, you depowered yourself? Like, I can't understand the weird masochism involved in this. It's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's a little confusing. And it makes me really side-eye the writer's room in some big ways. But, you know, whatever, man. I don't know if they just got so caught up in the metaphor that they didn't realize what the metaphor meant anymore.
And they were just dissing themselves, you know?
Yeah, like, in the end, like, you really hammered home how much you suck while everyone's telling you, by the way, you suck. Okay. And I understand that there's a very small faction of fans out there that are like, this is brilliant storytelling. It's so deep and woven. You're wrong. Like, I'm very sorry, but you're wrong.
You lose.
This show hasn't been deep in a very long time. And that sounds like I'm saying something bad. Media doesn't have to be deep for you to enjoy it. That's not me telling you don't enjoy it, but like, be real. This was a hot mess this season. It was just, I don't even know.
This season, yes. This was not a good season. I mean, this episode was good, and if they pull it out next week too, great. I would rather leave with a decent taste in my mouth, you know, and some good memories. But boy, mostly season 15, woof, forgettable at best. But
yeah,
and you know what? If next week isn't good, but I don't like the ending, I'll just stop at this episode.
I'll just pretend this is it.
You know, inherit the earth.
This is
it, because it was great.
I have said for years that there is not a season. I can't sit there and say I like this season, but I can pull episodes. This is the first season where I cannot pull a single episode I liked. There are only scenes from episodes I liked. Arguably, we could say Last Holiday is an episode I could sit through and be like, yeah, this is fine. But aside from that, there is not one full episode that I can't, that I can actually say, like, oh, this episode's good. No. Good scenes. Mm-hmm. And I went back, speaking of the, I call them the Fiat Chesters, but whatever. Fancy Chesters, whatever you want to call them. I went back and I was like, what episode was that? So I was trying to find it. So much happened in that episode that I didn't remember. And right now, I can't tell you what any of it is. I don't remember. I just remember that when I went to find them, like, if I'm not mistaken, like, they all, like, Sam, Dean, Jack, and Cass go to a church. Cass might go to the empty in that episode. I think that might be the same episode where Jack temporarily kills Cass. Like, a lot goes on in that episode. A lot. But, like, the only good part is the Fancy Chesters. And when I tell you all that happened in that episode, does it even sound like it makes sense that the Fancy Chesters are in it? No. It doesn't even sound like coherent. But anyway, this episode was great.
And I know we
a lot of it.
We kind of touched on it, but yeah, that ending montage with Running on Empty with Jackson Brown. Oh, instant tears. It was beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it so much. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I hate montages, but
I'm a
heartless
montage.
Evil
You're
old crone.
On my montage parade. I love me a good montage and song.
I hate me a montage. I think they're lazy. Okay.
There could be a montage in a show that I've never watched before, and you know, you put a sweet song to it. And a sweet montage. I'll cry my eyes out, and I don't even know who anybody is in it. That's how much I'm a sucker for montages.
Yeah, I just think that
I love them.
I think in this day and age, when you do a montage in earnest, it's weird. Like, I'm like, 1987 called. But I will say that while the montage didn't make me emotional, it was nice to see certain moments, especially like a lot of the older moments, because it's been a while since I did like a full rewatch. It was nice to be like, oh yeah, that, and oh yeah, that. So that was nice.
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say about the season in general and the fact that we have an epilogue kind of episode. Like, this episode was clearly very like short running time, because the two musical cues we had were very long. They were very, very long.
I loved it.
I'm glad we had two good musical cues, and I feel like, wow, you all finally used your budget for something good. But I would be curious
with the trunk slam too.
Yeah, that was great. Yep. That really was great.
We got work to do. Yeah, it's like they saved up their money all season and spent it on this episode.
Well, I will say that, you know, by using stock footage to show that the people have disappeared around the world, that's
mm-hmm.
a savings. We don't know if, like, maybe there were intended to be more people in this episode, like,
mm-hmm.
credited actors, but because of quarantine, they decided not to. However, you did also have to quarantine actors, which costs money, because everybody had to be there for 2 weeks doing nothing before you even pay them for their work. Plus, you're going to likely have to, you know, you got to pay for their food and things like that also, because that's what studios do. which I think fascinating, like, if you think about it, like with Mark Pellegrino, they quarantined Mark Pellegrino to film what looks like maybe max a day, max 2 days, maybe just one, I'd say two, but still. They quarantined him for 2 weeks to film very little.
And
which goes to show that, you know, when you know, that it was clearly on a very important beat that they wanted.
Yeah, because they didn't even put him in the opening credits. You know, they wanted it to be a surprise.
No, yeah, they wanted the surprise. And plus, like I know that Jared and Jensen Singer and Dab have been giving interviews where they've been saying, and now, you know, now we see what they meant, where 19 was the season finale and 20 will be the series finale. And, you know, it's very clear now what they meant. I would argue, and that's why I keep saying epilogue, because I think by killing, like, for killing Lucifer for good, you also close out the series, because Lucifer is not a season villain. This is a villain we've had for, he's probably the longest running villain. I think it was smart. Initially, I was a little irritated that Sam has never gotten to kill Lucifer. But I think in terms of getting the audience to understand that Lucifer is truly no longer a threat, I think it was smart to have Michael kill him. Because every other time we've had someone else kill him, it just doesn't stick.
Hmm.
Well, I guess
right.
Technically when Dean killed him, he was still Michael. Was he? I don't know. I got distracted by the marionette legs. Let's not worry about it.
Yeah.
Those are dark times.
We all did.
And if Jensen doesn't want to
it was a dark
him,
day.
Yeah.
It was a dark day, and Jensen's never letting that go. So.
No. Bob, you know. Uncle Bob has done Jensen dirty a lot of times, man. That was one of them. This season was amazing.
And Michael did kill him with that special Archangel Blight.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
The gold twisted one.
Speaking of, I really like, I don't think people really like going by the timeline, I don't think people really how funny that line was supposed to be and how funny Jake's delivery of it, but when after he kills his Lucifer, after he kills his brother, and he's like, how are you doing? He's like, I'm a bit winded. I haven't really gotten the battle. Like, that battle was nothing.
I know.
That battle was nothing. He was like, I'm winded. Like, that was so funny.
He basically teleported from one end of the room to the other. That was it.
Great.
I wonder if there was more of a battle, but they just didn't rewrite his line. You know, about it, like it was way more of a fight, but they had to cut it because
of COVID. I feel like it was intended to be funny. The only thing and Becky, I can't believe you didn't think of this. The only thing is, now, this is where I'm gonna admit that I may be misremembering this. In the episode earlier this season where we saw Michael and Adam, didn't they, like, share? They did share, like, it. But this episode, we only saw Michael. But, like,
he said
Adam's dead again.
Well, Adam specifically said that. He specifically said that. Because Dean asked him,
mm-hmm.
"How, you know, what about Adam?" And he said that Chuck killed him. And Dean said something like, Dean said, poor bastard. I forget what the exact words were. He said he never caught a break.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he never caught a break.
Okay.
It's true.
I mean, but still, poor Adam.
I know,
but only
you and Clarissa cared, but still.
At least he's not in hell. I mean, he's not in hell in jail right now, so.
True.
He's obliterated into nothing, I guess. I don't know.
I love what someone on Twitter pointed out, that now when Sam prays, someone's listening, actually listening,
mm-hmm.
and could answer him, you know. And I think that Sam and Dean made the best parents for Jack. and Jack loves them so much. When he always started out with them, you know, what Sam and Dean, you know, did for me, and Sam and Dean this and that. And I love that. I just love their relationship with him.
And I like that. I did expect Jack to die, and I'm glad that he didn't. I kind of expected, like, God drink, like, him, like, no matter what he was going to do in this, I expected the power to be too much for him to contain and for it to do something bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad it didn't. So I'm glad that his redemption for Sam and Dean was that he gets to be a better God for them.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't have to die for them. And he just gets to create a better, he just gets to create a better world for them.
Yes.
Yeah. It was beautiful.
Yeah, it was lovely. And I mentioned it before, but I really loved the scene with Sam and Dean at the end sitting on the table, you know, saying to everyone that we lost along the way, and now we get to write our own story, finally free. And it's they really feel like they are free now, and it's been so long, and they've had to sacrifice so much, and it's so nice that now they have that chance. You know, there's no more Chuck manipulating things, and it's just plain old hunting, and if that's what they want. And I think it's also a little bit Jared and Jensen. They're free now.
Oh, they totally broke character in that moment.
Yeah, and then Jared's tearing up, and Jensen's got his arm around him, squeezes his shoulder like, don't worry, I got you, because you see when he does it, Jared jumps a little bit, like he wasn't quite expecting that move, you know, maybe in the scene.
They totally broke character. Because I've always said.
Just loved it.
Sam and Dean resemble Jared and Jensen, but they are not identical. Like, their face is just different.
Uh-huh.
And if you ever get the chance to do a photo op with them and ask them to jump into character and watch their face change, really see it. It's very, very interesting. In a way that I don't see in a lot of actors. It's fascinating. It's really cool. And in that moment, they both 100% broke character. And it could have been bad, but it wasn't. It was just nice. Again, for a show that breaks its fourth wall, and I can complain all day about fourth wall breaking, and I have a lot of feelings about it. But at the end of the day, I love those two idiots, both Sam and Dean and Jared and Jensen, so I'll take it.
Okay.
As much as I bitch, as much as I complain, I'm also real easy in that. I'm real easy.
They kept me coming back to this show when I would have abandoned for so many reasons of story.
Oh, I've always said,
and other characters, whatever. But
I walked away from Better from For Less.
Yep, definitely. But I said once, I said, as long as they're in, I'm in, and it's. Because of them, and I think it's because of their 100% professionalism and commitment, and just in the characters and the actors playing them, so special. That relationship, you couldn't wish it, you know, you couldn't manufacture it more perfectly than they've had it. So yeah, it's pretty special. It amused me when they got up and walked into the camera. You got to look at the table because they added Castiel and Jack to the table. And it reminded me of the Con appearance where Jared was like, and, you know, it's like a guest book. You know, we're just going to add Woman in White Winchester, you know, and everybody else.
And I have two feelings about that. One, but they had already ruined it with Mary, so fine. But
yeah, I don't think much of that table anymore. But
no, but I think it's so funny that because they had the SW and DW truly carved in, but everything else is CGI, and it's so blatantly CGI, it just looks so weird. Like, why didn't you just have somebody come in and actually carve it in? unless they really did let Jared have that table, and he was like, no, absolutely not.
Yeah.
I can't figure out why.
I hope he did.
I hope he did.
Yeah,
it's
like,
cool
no.
Table.
They were both.
But, and it gives me a bit of, it
really
gives me a bit of good feeling. I like that the actual table only has SWDW wherever it is if it wasn't demolished. But I just think that, like, if you were going to do it, because especially with Jack and especially with the Castiel, it just looked real weird. I also think it's hilarious that I know that they went with Castiel to avoid the Cast S's argument. They were like, we're not dealing with it. We're just going to put the whole name.
The whole freaking name.
we think it's with two S's, and I agree it's with two S's because I always watch with closed captioning, so I always knew it was two S's. But they're like, we're not dealing with the fights. We're not at this, not now.
Yeah,
not now.
Fine.
Like,
I love that Jensen has always disliked that they added the MW to the table, you know, and now the others, he liked it, that it was just special. It was something Sam and Dean, it came from the initials being carved in the Impala when they were kids to the table. And then again, like they just started adding things to it. So even though, again, I saw someone mentioned on Twitter, it's like, fine, carve whatever you want in the table, but the Impala only has SW and DW as it should, and that's their home, and that's their most important thing. And she's the third lead, so, that's the important part. So, you know, now it's like, table doesn't bother me as much, you know, like whatever.
And for me, as someone who technically hates the bunker, you know, I don't care. I'm still mad that the bunker didn't get blown up. I really thought we were going to have that in 17 when Chuck burst through the door. I was like, break it all down. And it's no. And then
well,
this
episode,
I was like, you know what?
Maybe
we've got two archangels. They're going to fight. We're going to end Death here. And we got a new Death and two archangels. And break it all. No. Damn. So the bunker unfortunately lives on. And I feel like that's a direct attack against me that the bunker lives on.
Okay. As a huge Jim Beaver and Bobby Singer fan, we have to talk about that preview for, if you want to call it a preview, for the series finale, because it is Jim Beaver, Bobby, narrating it. And I loved it so much. And it makes gives me hope that there's going to be a lot of him in the episode. Maybe
original
he,
Bobby.
How to break
like,
your heart.
Real Bobby.
Well,
I don't know how to break your heart.
He didn't. I know that he didn't film very long, so I know that.
No.
But he recently did post about his last day of doing ADR. You know, he recently posted about that. So my hope is that, like, Chuck narrated Swan Song, maybe Bobby will be narrating the last episode.
Carry On. Well, could be. I thought it was interesting we heard Bobby say, here's to running into you guys on the other side, which he said before.
Because that's the only way we're going to see real Bobby is if he's in heaven.
Right, exactly.
Well, I do have my theory about that that end episode with original Bobby.
I have theories. I have theories, and I'm afraid to vocalize them because they're not great.
I love Susan. Susan's theory
they
is
kind
great.
Of suck, but they kind of suck, and I think they suck because they're probably really close to right, and that sucks.
Exactly, Susan's is great, so I know that's not going to happen.
Whenever somebody's like this, and this, I'm like, oh, that's too creative. There's no way. I love that. No way in hell. Mine is not great. Yeah, mine is not something you want. Mine is not super creative. Ergo, I'm pretty sure it's close. And I'm not going to put it out into the universe because let's enjoy the high of 19 for the next 6 days.
Yeah. let's enjoy the next week. Let's enjoy the next week. You know, I don't know why that made me think of something. We just talked about an episode that we love, but going back to the Robber Barons, it just, I mean, the whole thing where just all the terrible writing decisions he made in that episode and among others, and it was even thinking, you know, Becky and I talked about it, I said, was he even thinking about anything, and how could he do that? And I remember when Jensen got so excited that one time, he finally had the motivation, oh, you brought Mom back,
oh,
so
no.
Dean can finally say to her what he needs to, and Barron's just kind of went, yeah, let's go with that, which meaning he had no idea why he brought her back and nothing about it. And Jensen actually came up with this wonderful, intelligent reason, you know, and motivation. And Barron's hadn't even given it a breath of a thought. So anyway,
again, I go back
it
to
good Goodriddens.
Oh. It must be, it must be the best thing in the world to be a cis white male. And know that no matter how mediocre you are, no matter how problematic you are, you will still get a job that pays you tens of thousands of dollars per episode to be that mediocre. And the fact that the show that he's going to is Kung Fu, which is going to be about a Chinese American family, fills me
with
absolute dread. Oh my God!
I'm so disappointed.
I'm just
I
like, how
the previous
can
reboot.
He be more racist? I mean, obviously, one can always be more racist.
I'm so disappointed. Anyway, ugh. And I'm not happy at all that Meredith Glenn is going to The Boys.
I don't care because I wasn't going to watch The Boys, but it makes me extremely uncomfortable
like
for Jensen. Yeah, well, I mean, we discussed.
I really like that series. I didn't think I would. I was like, I don't know. I'll give it a try. It's a Kripke show, whatever.
Yeah,
and
I'm judging it solely on the
really
source material, though.
So
yeah, I'm judging it solely on the source material, and I mean, again, like I said before, maybe one day, but no, currently no. So I mean, that doesn't affect me personally, but it makes me very uncomfortable for Jensen.
Like, yes, I don't think
run,
I'm
boy,
happy
run.
About that one bit. Yeah, but let me tell you, the Boys fans, they will just
they're not having
Dusty Eller alive. They won't.
Oh, not even
because,
that. Like they're that's not the same kind of fandom where you can know. And good for Meredith because she needs to take her feet out of fandoms. This thing where she, you know, giving journalists. Scripts on the side, Meredith. We know you did it. You know, stop. Just oh my God, these writers. This show will eventually be a case study in what not to do in every aspect. I mean, there will be doctorates.
Yes. Oh yeah, but yeah, I'm well, you know. We'll see how she does on The Boys, but I'm not looking forward to her being on there because of those reasons. And but I really like The Boys. It's just so batshit crazy and gets even crazier all the time, and it's gonna be so different for Jensen. It's gonna be weird, but I'm looking forward to it. So we'll see if Soldier Boy lasts more than a season because they don't always. We'll make it. We shall see. Anything
I think
else?
That's
about
all
these
I've
episodes?
Got, unless anyone wants to hear me be angry more, which I don't think anybody does. So, I can be angry for hours. Literally,
it is. Hey, this is the most entertainment I've had in a while. So,
me being angry is like literally a superpower at this point. So, yeah.
Oh, goodness gracious.
And I currently enjoy nothing more than telling white men, they're just, God, you're such white men. So, you know.
I'm looking over my notes just to see if there's something. And
this is the one episode where weirdly I didn't take notes. I just went solely on emotion for both of these episodes. Mm-hmm. Usually I take extensive notes that I almost always don't even get to, and this both of these episodes, no, and yet I feel like I said the most, I feel like I said more than ever. Weird.
Well, it's nice to have an episode where, or in our episodes, that you got a lot to say about, you know, because normally, sometimes this season we're like, ah, there's just nothing to talk about, you know, and it wasn't fun, and it wasn't entertaining, and there was no redeeming quality. So it was nice to have, you know, a rage episode and a fun episode, so it was good.
Yeah.
I'll give my notes tonight. I laughed. I'm laughing because I wrote down the and Cass supposedly calls Dean, and I wrote down, ha, he literally phoned it in.
Who else said that? Somebody said something, but they phrased it really funny, though. It was like, yeah.
Pretty much. It was.
When that phone call first happened, I was like, no, you are not doing this, no.
Yeah, oh, no, don't you dare come back. And I was worried at the end when Jack was bringing people back that Cass would walk out, but I don't think so.
Here's the weird thing. Because I was so bored, you know, I took shelter in place and quarantine quite seriously. So in the past, you know, we're November, so in the past, like, eight months or whatever, I don't know, math is hard. Since March, I have left the house very, very little, mostly for doctor's appointments or, like, very, like, things that I have to go to go
mm-hmm.
vote, you know, whatever. Because I live in Texas, so, you know, heaven forbid we get to vote by mail.
Yeah.
So, you know, things like that. And so I've left the house very little. So I spent way too much time tracking filming when they went up and quarantined and everything, and like paying attention to the boards and stuff like that. So I knew he wasn't back. So I just laughed. I didn't, and I kind of had a feeling it was Lucifer because, again, I wasn't surprised about Pellegrino because somebody had posted a picture of him and the actress who plays Betty, Kimberly, I cannot remember her last name. And, oh, she posted it, actually.
Kimberly Sussman.
And then I guess she was told to take it down because then it disappeared. So,
Kimberly
Sussman. Yeah. So
and
I was
she
not
was
surprised.
Also in another episode. She was in Adventures of Babysitting.
Yes.
Can I just, can you just indulge me for 2 seconds on Kimberly Sussman? Just for 2 seconds. Kimberly Sussman mm-hmm. played a character in a Hallmark Christmas movie called 9 Lives of Christmas. And that was my mother's favorite Christmas movie.
Aww.
And she had Alzheimer's. She had Alzheimer's. And when it's Alzheimer's, you like comfort and routine. We literally watched
mm-hmm.
that movie every single night. I knew it by heart. And she's and it's actually cute. I mean, if you happen to be in the mood for a Hallmark Christmas movie, it's fun and it's sweet. It's got her romantic opposite is Brandon Root, who also does a great job.
Oh, I like
humor.
Him.
Yeah, it's for a horror. It's very called The 9 Lives of Christmas, and she's so good in it. And it was my mother's favorite Christmas movie. And anytime, I mean, we watched it every single night for months and months. And we could joke about it a little bit. And it was something she remembered
Aww.
Parts of. So it was so nice to see her as Betty. I mean, unfortunately, briefly, but I went, oh, my gosh.
And honestly, she was great.
Anyway.
I thoroughly enjoyed her in the role. She was great.
You know,
yeah, I know,
briefly. Yeah, same figures. But, yeah. So, anyway,
yeah,
thank
so
you.
I didn't immediately make the connection that from the phone call to it being Lucifer. So, but I did know that it wasn't Cass. So I knew there was going to be some kind of weird fake out. So it right before Dean answered the door, I was like, oh, I bet you it's, and then it was. So unfortunately,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like a big surprise for me, but if you're a general audience viewer or just somebody who's not super bored and following all kinds of random stuff on the internet and paying attention to boards, because even in fandom, not everybody does that, clearly. Then it was a cool surprise. And it was still entertaining, even when like you half expect it. It's still entertaining.
Yeah. Enjoyed that part. I wonder what they're going to do next week. I mean, Sam and Dean out hunting?
I'm afraid that I know what they're going to do next week.
Well, there's a vampire listed in the cast credits. so there's a vampire, an officer,
and a mother walk into a bar. Apparently.
Walk into a barn. And Bobby's
and
in there somewhere. And Bobby's in there somewhere. So we'll see. But
at some point there's pie. At some point there's pie.
Oh, yeah. No, there's two pies.
Yeah.
Not one pie, two forks, like it was in the diner.
No, I mean, it's pretty telegraphed in that still that Sam is going to slam that pie into Dean's face. It's very telegraphed. But, so, again, those indicators kind of paint a very clear picture, and I don't like it at all.
Well, we're going to find out in less than a week. So,
yep. So, until then.
Until then. Is that it? Anything else about either episode anybody would like to add?
I'm good. I'm tapped out.
I ordered two new diamond paintings today, so that's my big news. So.
You caught the sale. You caught the good sale.
I missed the ones that I told you about that were going on sale at 8. I didn't get any of those. So I went to this other place that had some that I liked and got those. So.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Is there any news this week we need to mention? Any notes? Anything?
I don't think there's any news ever again.
Well, there's lots of news,
but not pertaining to Supernatural. I mean,
Well, that's true. This is true. But, I mean, there's lots of interviews and retrospectives and, you know, all the people talking about the years of Supernatural. It's all over the place out there.
Everybody have fun hunting down the myriad of interviews and Zoom videos and tweets and Instagram posts and goodbyes, because Lord knows I ain't doing it.
Well, there's plenty of it. All right. If that's it, we will say goodnight. Thanks to everybody listening. We appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. We had a fun podcast tonight. When the episodes are good or rage-inducing, we have a good podcast. That's it. And we'll see y'all next week for the series finale.
Bye.
The boys.
Good night, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. And let the boys play us out for the penultimate time.
Hey, I'm Jared Padalecki.
And this is Jensen Ackles.
And you're listening to Winchester Radio.